I'm Marco Werman, and it's The World. We're a co-production of the BBC World Service, PRI, and WGBH here in Boston. When it comes to covering stories in the U.S. on the show, we often try to get some perspective from the outside, like race in America, especially this year. Ferguson, Baltimore, Charleston, and the seemingly never-ending headlines that remind us of the racial tension in this country, whether it's the tragedy of Sandra Bland or the confusing identity of Rachel Dolezal. This has been a year like no other in recent memory. Two American reporters based in Kenya also felt it, Mike Onyego and Rupa Guganeni. Call this an insider-outsider view of things. Mike and Rupa report throughout Africa. Mike's African-American from Chicago. Rupa is Indian-American from West Virginia. And this summer, they went to New Orleans to take a look at the controversy over Confederate symbols in the wake of the South Carolina church shooting. They reported for the podcast Us and Them. Rupa and Mike join me from the BBC studios in Nairobi, where I was just a week ago. Hi, Rupa. Hi, Mike.
Hey, how's it going?
Hi, Marco.
Thanks for joining us. This podcast, I got to say, was a really compelling way into this issue. Just tell us what your approach was. Was it to come at it as American foreign correspondents or almost as foreigners?
Well, yeah, that was kind of the idea when we were sort of talking about the issue of Confederate history and Confederate identity in Kenya. We cover a lot of civil wars out here, you know, primarily in Sudan and Somalia. Having covered them for so long, we just kind of we saw what was going on in the South and in New Orleans and the sort of history around these things and the fight around the narratives of who won, who lost, who was right, who was wrong. And we saw a lot of echoes in the things that we cover in Africa. And so we just thought, you know, let's keep our foreign correspondents' hats on and try to go down there and see if we can maybe see something different about it. Because obviously, as Americans, these debates are very rigid, but you know, maybe an outside perspective might lend some new insights.
So you come over kind of wearing your foreign correspondent's hat. How do the people you talk to in New Orleans, how did they treat you?
Well, yeah, that's a complicated answer. I mean, they were on the face very nice. You know, we didn't really have too much problem chatting with people, talking with people. But, you know, it's complicated because we're both neither of us are white, and these issues are obviously very tinged with race. So sometimes they got very uncomfortable. Sometimes they were very awkward. Sometimes we kind of wanted to chip in simply because there were just things from our perspective as Americans that live abroad, also as Americans of color, that we just kind of seemed off or funny or sort of awkward or bizarre to us.
I also think that people saw us and sort of knew where we stood or thought they knew where we stood, and therefore they sort of wanted to convince us of their goodness or their rightness. And as journalists, we tried very hard sort of not make up our minds before we talked to people. So that was always an interesting the conversations we had where everybody, there was a lot of posturing, I think, on both sides.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, I was a little surprised by just kind of how comfortable people, mostly white people, seem to be talking to you as people of color about some pretty inflammatory things. Let's listen to one example.
I don't see very many blacks being oppressed around here or in anywhere else in the South. In fact, if anything, I see white people going out of their way to help people who are not looking like them.
All right. That guy doesn't even sound like he's from the South. You even had people suggest to you that slavery wasn't that bad. How did they justify that? And what was your reaction when you heard things like that?
Well, that soundbite, that's from Jason, a man that we met at a rally around Lee Circle. And he
and what was that rally
he works
about?
It was a rally that was hosted by the Sons of Confederate Veterans. And it was in support of the Robert E. Lee Monument. He was very quick to introduce himself as an amateur historical preservationist, but also somebody who was not affiliated with the Sons of Confederate Veterans. And he, as you noted, doesn't really sound very Southern. He's not even – actually, I don't think he was born in the South.
In Kansas, I think.
He was born in Kansas. I sort of pegged him as a moderate in the debate. And then we met him later on, and then he sort of launched into this 3-4 hour conversation with us, and it turns out that he held what I felt were some pretty extreme views.
Inflammatory.
Yeah.
with this debate with the Confederate monuments and the sort of history of the Confederacy, you know, slavery was kind of this awkward heart of the issue. Everyone knew they would have to address it at some point. And so some people tried to say, okay, you know, the Civil War had nothing to do with slavery, but a lot of people maybe acknowledged that they couldn't get around it. And so then we're trying to soften the blow of slavery when it came to these debates and discussions. And that's kind of where you got into all these arguments about, you know, maybe the economics of slavery or things like, well, you know, if that's your property, you don't intentionally damage your property, so why would they treat them badly? Or we heard at the rally essentially arguments like, you would have starved to death in Africa, or you would have died of disease in Africa, so you're lucky you're over here.
You should be thankful.
Right. That you made it over here.
I'm still kind of fascinated by how these people kind of perceived you, like what they thought you were. I mean, you guys were taking pulse as reporters, not covering breaking news, where you might have had, you know, press credentials around your neck. Did they see you as journalists?
Yeah, I would say they did.
Yeah.
But you know, we weren't on any kind of deadline, right? So we weren't trying to just get the sort of the big inflammatory statement out of either side. We were just kind of sitting back and listening.
Right. We spent a lot of time with these people, and I think that they appreciated that. And we didn't, for the most part, we listened.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, it comes across in the podcast that you are kind of flabbergasted, but you do take it all in stride, employing as much, you know, journalistic objectivity as possible. But then, and this was kind of incredible, you meet a guy from Mozambique in a local bar in New Orleans. His name is Marcelino, and you're talking to him about the American Civil War. And then, Rupa, you bring up the issue of his country's Civil War. Let's listen to that.
So Mozambique had a very long civil war, and it's over now. How do people remember it?
We don't talk about that war no more. We don't, because we know like was a lot of pain involved, a lot of people die. If we talk, will bring us more sadness, and nobody want to talk about it. And I believe most of the black people here, they're part of the problem, because all they do just complain. It's like, okay, it was done. Wasn't fair. But what you going to do? You going to go back to the past and change?
Wow, that is so complex, hearing that Mozambican man. And then you're there with the American named Jason. He's listening in. And he's actually thrilled to hear this African immigrant say that American blacks basically need to get over it.
Yeah, that was a really kind of hard thing to see happen, because I think having that guy come in the way he did, it almost shut the conversation down.
I mean, it undermined everything we were saying.
Yeah,
yeah. Whatever kind of debate we were having, whatever sort of degree to which he was willing to maybe concede another side, another perspective, just sort of ended at that moment.
Then Mike, you and Rupa, you go off and you sit down in your car and you start talking, and Rupa secretly records the conversation. And Mike, you are pissed off. Let's hear this.
That guy, he knows what colonialism looks like. He knows that. And he can't see it here? Are you kidding me? Black people are all good because it's America? Are you kidding me? My dad never thought that ever. I can't believe it. How dare you tell me that? I don't know what I'm talking about.
So, Mike, as you say, that guy knows what colonialism looks like, the Mozambican man. Why was this man, Marcelino, the one who really made you lose it, do you think?
Because, like I said, it undermines any cogent argument that you can make for a closer look at American history, right? The argument is always there that African Americans should just move past slavery and move on, but there isn't often a chance where you get to debate the sort of long-term effects that's had on a massive population, right? So for someone from Africa to be just given such instant credibility to just allow people to move past some really unresolved issues, it wasn't fair. I mean, it just swept so much under the rug so quickly that it was almost shocking to me. You know, it was like traumatic to just kind of have that conversation end so abruptly.
Rupa, for you, what did this trip actually mean? I mean, is it about just how hard it is for outsiders to grasp the weight of symbols?
Yeah. So I'm from West Virginia, and there's a lot of Confederate flags around West Virginia. So I sort of grew up with that symbol around. And even my father, who's an immigrant and who moved from India to the U.S. and eventually settled in West Virginia, when he got there, he bought a Confederate flag, a vanity plate for his car.
Wow.
He had no idea what it meant. He thought it looked really nice, and he thought it was some take on the British flag. And then eventually a friend of his said, hey, why are you a brown man driving with this Confederate flag on your car? And then connected the dots for him. So that's sort of an example to me of how complicated these histories and these symbols are for outsiders. And then by extension, sort of how complicated and confusing race in America is to outsiders, which I think Marcelino is experiencing.
I mean, all this I find really fascinating because I was born in New York, but grew up from the age of 6 in North Carolina in the mid-60s. And, you know, the road from the two brainy college towns, Chapel Hill to Durham, 15501, was called the Jefferson Davis Highway. And, you know, I saw Confederate flags everywhere as a kid, but these things weren't discussed. It was just kind of part of the landscape. And I guess at the time I just thought, well, maybe the Civil War never really ended, and all of this was proof of that. But your generation is fighting back, and as this podcast shows, you're digging in and trying to kind of get a grasp on this. What do you think has happened in the course of 20 or 30 years?
I think there was a moment where maybe it was the 80s or the 90s or whatever, where we kind of started to tell ourselves that we had solved these issues, that they were finished. And if anything, the sort of last couple of years have showed us that these issues haven't been fully resolved, these issues of race, these issues of class, these issues of whatever you want to call it, white supremacy, of which the Confederacy is a sort of a symbol to some people. So with everything coming back out, people are starting to say, no, let's have the whole discussion, because we didn't get to maybe address the whole issue. There were sort of piecemeal adjustments, but a lot of people still feel like that they haven't been able to sort of give the full story. And that's kind of what this is about, right? You know, I mean, what the supporters of the flag talk about this slogan, history, not hate. What that does is sort of take one side of these symbols, you know, because yes, these guys were generals. They were gallant military leaders, but it kind of ignores half of what they were fighting for. You know, it takes their actions without the intent, you know. And I'm not saying that there is one answer to it, but like to not address slavery, to not address what the Confederacy was fighting for, is a sort of an obfuscation, because it's ignoring half of the issue.
I mean, just last week, the city council in New Orleans voted to take down 4 Confederate symbols. What do you make of that? And do you think it shows the discussion of the legacy of slavery is being had and is progressing?
It's definitely the conversation and debate is definitely happening, and it feels very messy. I mean, we were at some of those hearings, and there was a lot of screaming and not very much listening. But to me, it feels like progress, because they're in the same room. People are being honest. They might not be very nice to each other, but people are saying how they feel. And to me, that feels like progress.
Yeah, having those two opinions out in the open together, it really is different, because previously the sort of these two sides of New Orleans may not have ever even met each other, you know, and they weren't interacting really, not truly. So if anything, the city council's decision is forcing the issue, and maybe they won't fully resolve it, but at least it's like they're talking now.
Journalists Mike Onyego and Rupa Guganeni, they reported their story, A Confederate Reckoning, for the podcast Us and Them. And they spoke with me from Nairobi, where they're both based.